He poked his head through Lois's front door and called, "Yo, anybody home?" "Come on in, Ralph," Lois called back. "We're in the living room." Ralph had always imagined the Hobbit Hole would be a lot like Lois Chass's little house half a block or so down the hill from the Red Apple. Neat and crowded, a little too dark perhaps, but scrupulously clean. And he guessed a hobbit like Bilbo Baggins, whose interest in his ancestors was eclipsed only by his interest in what might be for dinner, would have been enchanted by the tiny living room, where relatives looked down from every wall. The place of honor on top of the television was held by a tinted studio photograph of the man Lois always referred to as Mr. Chass. McGovern was sitting hunched forward on the couch, with a plate of macaroni and cheese balanced on his bony knees. The television was on, and a game show was clattering through the bonus round. "What does she mean, we're in the living room?" Ralph asked. But before McGovern could answer, Lois came in with a steaming plate in her hands. "Here," she said, "sit down, eat. I talked with Simone, and she said it'll probably be on news at noon." "Gee, Lois, you didn't have to do this," he said, taking the plate. But his stomach demurred strongly when he got his first smell of onions and mellow cheddar. He glanced at the clock on the wall, just visible between photos of a man in a raccoon coat and a woman who looked as if Vodo Diodo might have been in her vocabulary, and was astounded to see that it was 12:05. "I didn't do anything but stick some leftovers into the microwave," she said. "Someday, Ralph, I'll cook for you. Now sit down." "Not on my hat, though," McGovern said, without taking his eyes from the bonus round. He picked the fedora up off the couch, dropped it on the floor beside him, and went back to his own portion of the casserole, which was disappearing rapidly. "This is very tasty, Lois." "Thank you." She paused long enough to watch one of the contestants bag a trip to Barbados and a new car, then hurried back into the kitchen. The screaming winner faded out and was replaced by a man in wrinkled pajamas, tossing and turning in bed. He sat up and looked at the clock on the nightstand. It said 3:18 a.m., a time of day with which Ralph had become very familiar. "Can't sleep?" an announcer asked sympathetically. "Tired of lying awake night after night?" A small glowing pill came gliding in through the insomniac's bedroom window. To Ralph, it looked like the world's smallest flying saucer, and he wasn't surprised to see that it was blue. Ralph sat down beside McGovern. Although both men were quite slim, scrawny might actually have described the bill better. Between them, they used up most of the couch. Lois came in with her own plate and sat down in the rocker by the window. Over the canned music and studio applause that marked the end of the game show, a woman's voice said, "This is Lizette Benson. Topping our news at noon, a well-known women's rights advocate agrees to speak in Derry, sparking a protest and 6 arrests at a local clinic. We'll also have Chris Alterberg's weather and Bob McClanahan on sports. Stay tuned." Ralph forked a bite of macaroni and cheese into his mouth, looked up, and saw Lois watching him. "All right?" she asked. "Delicious," he said, and it was. But he thought that right now a big helping of Franco-American spaghetti served cold right out of the can would have tasted just as good. He wasn't just hungry, he was ravenous. Seeing auras apparently burned a lot of calories. "What happened, very briefly, was this," McGovern said, swallowing the last of his own lunch and putting the plate down next to his hat. "About 18 people showed up outside Woman Care at 8:30 this morning, while people were arriving for work. Lois's friend Simone says they're calling themselves the Friends of Life. But the core group are the assorted fruits and nuts that used to go by the name of Daily Bread. She said one of them was Charles Pickering, the guy the cops caught apparently getting ready to firebomb the joint late last year. Simone's niece said the police only arrested 4 people. It looks like she was a little low." "Was Ed really with them?" Ralph asked. "Yes," Lois said, "and he got arrested too. At least no one got maced. That was just a rumor. No one got hurt at all." "This time," McGovern added darkly. The News at Noon logo appeared on Lois's Hobbit-sized color TV, then dissolved into Lizette Benson. "Good afternoon," she said. "Topping our news on this beautiful late summer day, prominent writer and controversial women's rights advocate Susan Day agrees to speak at Derry's Civic Center next month, and the announcement of her speech sparks a demonstration at Woman Care, the Derry Women's Resource Center and Abortion Clinic, which has so polarized... There they go with that abortion clinic stuff again, McGovern exclaimed. Jesus! Hush, Lois said in a peremptory tone, not much like her usual tentative murmur. McGovern gave her a surprised look and hushed. John Kirkland at Woman Care, with the first of two reports. Lisette Benson was finishing, and the picture switched to a reporter doing a stand-up outside a long, low brick building. A super at the bottom of the screen informed viewers that this was a live-eye report. A strip of windows ran along one side of Woman Care. Two of them were broken, and several others were smeared with red stuff that looked like blood. Yellow police line tape had been strung between the reporter and the building. Three uniformed Derry cops and one plainclothesman stood in a little group on the far side of it. Ralph was not very surprised to recognize the detective as John Lydecker. They call themselves the Friends of Life, Lisette, and they claim their demonstration this morning was a spontaneous outpouring of indignation, prompted by the news that Susan Day, the woman radical pro-life group's nationwide call America's number one baby killer, is coming to Derry next month to speak at the Civic Center. At least one Derry police officer believes that's not quite the way it was, however. Kirkland's report went to tape, beginning with a close-up of Lydecker, who seemed resigned to the microphone in his face. There was no spontaneity about this, he said. Clearly a lot of preparation went into it. They've probably been sitting on advance word of Susan Day's decision to come here and speak for most of the week, just getting ready and waiting for the news to break in the paper, which it did this morning. The camera went to a two-shot. Kirkland was giving Lydecker his most penetrating Geraldo look. What do you mean, a lot of preparation? He asked. Most of the signs they were carrying had Miss Day's name on them. Also, there were over a dozen of these. A surprisingly human emotion slipped through Lydecker's policeman being interviewed mask. Ralph thought it was distaste. He raised a large plastic evidence bag, and for one horrified instant, Ralph was positive that there was a mangled and bloody baby inside. Then he realized that, whatever the red stuff might be, the body in the evidence bag was a doll's body. They didn't buy these at Kmart, Lydecker told the TV reporter. I guarantee you that. The next shot was a long-lens close-up of the smeared and broken windows. The camera panned them slowly. The stuff on the smeared ones looked more like blood than ever, and Ralph decided he didn't want the last two or three bites of his macaroni and cheese. The demonstrators came with baby dolls whose soft bodies had been injected with what police believed to be a mixture of Karo syrup and red food coloring, Kirkland said in voiceover. They flung the dolls at the side of the building as they chanted anti-Susan Day slogans. Two windows were broken, but there was no major damage. The camera stopped, centering on a gruesomely smeared pane of glass. Most of the dolls split open, Kirkland was saying, splattering a substance that looked enough like blood to badly frighten the employees who witnessed the bombardment. The shot of the red smeared window was replaced by one of a lovely dark-haired woman in slacks and a pullover. "Oh, look, it's Barbie," Lois cried. "Golly, I hope Simone's watching. Maybe I ought to..." It was McGovern's turn to say hush. "I was terrified," Barbara Richards told Kirkland. "At first, I thought they were really throwing dead bodies, or maybe fetuses they'd gotten hold of somehow. Even after Dr. Harper ran through, yelling there were only dolls, I still wasn't sure." "You said they were chanting?" Kirkland asked. "Yes, what I heard most clearly was, 'Keep the angel of death out of Derry.'" The report now reverted to Kirkland in his live stand-up mode. The demonstrators were ferried from Woman Care to the Derry Police Station on Main Street around 9 o'clock this morning, Lisette. I understand that 12 were questioned and released. 6 others were arrested on charges of malicious mischief, a misdemeanor. So it seems that another shot in Derry's continuing war over abortion has been fired. This is John Kirkland, Channel 4 News. Another shot in, McGovern began and threw up his hands. Lizette Benson was back on the screen. We now go to Ann Rivers, who talked less than an hour ago to two of the so-called friends of life who were arrested in this morning's demonstration. Ann Rivers was standing on the steps of the Main Street cop shop with Ed Deepno on one side and a tall, sallow, goateed individual on the other. Ed was looking natty and downright handsome in a gray tweed jacket and navy slacks. The tall man with a goatee was dressed as only a liberal with daydreams of what he might think of as the main proletariat could dress. Faded jeans, faded blue work shirt, wide red fireman's suspenders. It took Ralph only a second to place him. It was Dan Dalton, owner of Secondhand Rose Secondhand Clothes. The last time Ralph had seen him, he'd been standing behind the hanging guitars and bird cages in his shop window, flapping his hands at Ham Davenport in a gesture that said, "Who gives a shit what you think?" But it was Ed his eyes were drawn back to, of course. Ed, who looked natty and put together in more ways than one. McGovern apparently felt the same. "My God, I can't believe it's the same man," he murmured. "Lizette," the good-looking blonde was saying, "with me I have Edward Deepno and Daniel Dalton, both of Derry, two of those arrested in this morning's demonstration. That's correct, gentlemen? You were arrested?" They nodded, Ed with a barest twinkle of humor, Dalton with dour, jut-jawed determination. The gaze the latter fixed on Ann Rivers made him look, to Ralph at least, as if he were trying to remember which abortion clinic he had seen her hurrying into, head down and shoulders hunched. "Have you been released on bail?" "We were released on our own recognizance," Ed answered. "The charges were minor. It was not our intention to hurt anyone, and no one was hurt." "We were arrested only because the godless entrenched power structure in this town wants to make an example of us," Dalton said. And Ralph thought he saw a minute wince momentarily tighten Ed's face. "There he goes again" expression. Ann Rivers swung the mic back to Ed. "The major issue here isn't philosophical, but practical," he said. "Although the people who run woman care like to concentrate on their counseling services, therapy services, free mammograms, and other such admirable functions, there's another side to the place. Rivers of blood run out of woman care." "Innocent blood," Dalton cried. His eyes glowed in his long, lean face, and Ralph had a disturbing insight. All over eastern Maine, people were watching this and deciding that the man in the red suspenders was crazy, while his partner seemed like a pretty reasonable fellow. It was almost funny. Ed treated Dalton's interjection as the pro-life equivalent of hallelujah, giving it a single respectful beat before speaking again. "The slaughter at woman care has been going on for nearly 8 years now," Ed told her. "Many people, especially radical feminists like Dr. Roberta Harper, woman care's chief administrator, like to gild the lily with phrases like early termination. But what she's talking about is abortion, the ultimate act of abuse against women by a sexist society. But is lobbing dolls loaded with fake blood against the windows of a private clinic the way to put your views before the public, Mr. Deepno?" For a moment, just a moment, there and gone, the twinkle of good humor in Ed's eyes was replaced by a flash of something much harder and colder. For that one moment, Ralph was again looking at the Ed Deepno, who had been ready to take on a truck driver who outweighed him by 100 pounds. Ralph forgot that what he was watching had been taped an hour ago and was afraid for the slim blonde, who was almost as pretty as the woman to whom her interview subject was still married. "Be careful, young lady," Ralph thought. "Be careful and be afraid. You're standing next to a very dangerous man." Then the flash was gone, and the man in the tweed coat was once more just an earnest young fellow who had followed his conscience to jail. Once more it was Dalton, now nervously snapping his suspenders like big red rubber bands, who looked a few sandwiches shy of a picnic. "What we're doing is what the so-called good Germans failed to do in the 30s, Ed was saying. He spoke in the patient, lecturally tones of a man who has been forced to point this out over and over, mostly to those who should already know it. "They were silent and 6 million Jews died. In this country, a similar Holocaust..." Over 1,000 babies every day, Dalton said. His former shrillness had departed. He sounded horrified and desperately tired. Many of them are ripped from the wombs of their mothers in pieces, with their little arms waving in protest, even as they die. Oh, good God, McGovern said. That's the most ridiculous thing I have ever... Hush, Bill, Lois said sternly. Purpose of this protest? Rivers was asking Dalton. As you probably know, Dalton said, the city council has agreed to re-examine the zoning regulations that allow woman care to operate where it does and how it does. They could vote on the issue as early as November. The abortion rights people are afraid the council might throw sand in the gears of their death machine, so they've summoned Susan Day, this country's most notorious pro-abortion advocate, to try and keep the machine running. We are marshaling our forces. The pendulum of the microphone swung back to Ed. Will there be more protests, Mr. Deepno? She asked. And Ralph suddenly had an idea she might be interested in him in a way which was not strictly professional. Hey, why not? Ed was a good-looking guy, and Miss Rivers could hardly know that he believed the Crimson King and his centurions were in Derry, joining forces with the baby killers at Woman Care. Until the legal aberration which opened the door to this slaughter has been corrected, the protests will continue, Ed replied. And we'll go on hoping that the histories of the next century will record that not all Americans were good Nazis during this dark period of our history. Violent protests? It's violence we oppose. The two of them were now maintaining strong eye contact, and Ralph thought Ann Rivers had what Carolyn would have called a case of hot thighs. Dan Dalton was standing off to one side of the screen, all but forgotten. And when Susan Day comes to Derry next month, can you guarantee her safety? Ed smiled, and in his mind's eye, Ralph saw him as he had been on that hot August afternoon less than a month ago, kneeling with one hand planted on either side of Ralph's shoulders and breathing, "They burn the fetuses over in Newport," into his face. Ralph shivered. In a country where thousands of children are sucked from the wombs of their mothers by the medical equivalent of industrial vacuum cleaners, I don't believe anyone can guarantee anything, Ed replied. Ann Rivers looked at him uncertainly for a moment, as if deciding whether or not she wanted to ask another question, maybe for his telephone number, and then turned back to face the camera. "This is Ann Rivers at Derry Police Headquarters," she said. Lizette Benson reappeared, and something in the bemused cast of her mouth made Ralph think that perhaps he hadn't been the only one to sense the attraction between interviewer and interviewee. "We'll be following this story all day," she said. "Be sure to tune in at 6 for further updates. In Augusta, Governor Greta Powers responded to charges that she may have..." Lois got up and pushed the off button on the TV. She simply stared at the darkening screen for a moment, then sighed heavily and sat down. "I have blueberry compote," she said. "But after that, do either of you want any?" Both men shook their heads. McGovern looked at Ralph and said, "That was scary." Ralph nodded. He kept thinking of how Ed had gone striding back and forth through the spray thrown by the lawn sprinkler, breaking the rainbows with his body, pounding his fist into his open palm. How could they let him out on bail and then interview him on the news as if he was a normal human being? Lois asked indignantly. After what he did to poor Helen? My God, that Ann Rivers looked ready to invite him home to dinner. Or to eat crackers in bed with her, Ralph said dryly. The assault charge and this stuff today are entirely different matters, McGovern said. And you can bet your boots the lawyer or lawyers these yo-yos have got on retainer will be sure to keep it that way. And even the assault charge was only a misdemeanor, Ralph reminded her. How can assault be a misdemeanor? Lois asked. I'm sorry, but I never did understand that part. It's a misdemeanor when you only do it to your wife, McGovern said, hoisting his satiric eyebrow. It's the American way, Lo. She twisted her hands together restlessly, took Mr. Chass down from the television, looked at him for a moment, then put him back and resumed twisting her hands. Well, the law's one thing, she said, and I'd be the first to admit that I don't understand it all. But somebody ought to tell them he's crazy. that he's a wife beater and he's crazy. You don't know how crazy, Ralph said. And for the first time, he told them the story of what had happened the previous summer out by the airport. It took about 10 minutes. When he finished, neither of them said anything. They only looked at him with wide eyes. What? Ralph asked uneasily. You don't believe me? You think I imagined it? Of course I believe it, Lois said. I was just, well, stunned and frightened. Ralph, I think maybe you ought to pass that story on to John Lydecker, McGovern said. I don't think he can do a goddamn thing with it, but considering Ed's new playmates, I think it's information he should have. Ralph thought it over carefully, then nodded and pushed himself to his feet. No time like the present, he said. Want to come, Lois? She thought it over, then shook her head. I'm tired out, she said, and a little, what do the kids call it these days? A little freaked. I think I'll put my feet up for a bit, take a nap. You do that, Ralph said. You do look a little tuckered, and thanks for feeding us. Impulsively, he bent over her and kissed the corner of her mouth. Lois looked up at him with startled gratitude. Ralph turned off his own television a little over 6 hours later, as Lizette Benson finished the evening news and handed off to the sports guy. The demonstration at WomanCare had been bumped to the number two slot. The evening's big story was the continuing allegations that Governor Greta Powers had used cocaine as a grad student. And there was nothing new except that Dan Dalton was now being identified as the head of the Friends of Life. Ralph thought figurehead was probably a better word. Was Ed actually in charge yet? If he wasn't, Ralph guessed he would be before long, Christmas at the latest. A potentially more interesting question was what Ed's employers thought about Ed's legal adventures up the road in Derry. Ralph had an idea they would be a lot less comfortable with what had gone on today than with last month's domestic abuse charge. He had read only recently that Hawking Labs would soon become the fifth such research center in the Northeast to be working with fetal tissue. They probably wouldn't applaud the information that one of their research chemists had been arrested for chucking dolls filled with fake blood at the side of a clinic that did abortions. And if they knew how crazy he really was. Who's going to tell them, Ralph? You? No, that was a step further than he was willing to go, at least for the time being. Unlike going down to the police station with McGovern to talk to John Lydecker about the incident last summer, it felt like persecution, like writing, "Kill this cunt," beside a picture of a woman with whose views you didn't agree. That's bullshit, and you know it. I don't know anything, he said, getting up and going to the window. I'm too tired to know anything. But as he stood there, looking across the street at two men coming out of the Red Apple with a six-pack apiece, he suddenly did know something, remembered something that drew a cold line up his back. This morning, when he had come out of the Rite Aid and been overwhelmed by the auras and a sense of having stepped up to some new level of awareness, he had reminded himself again and again to enjoy but not to believe, that if he failed to make that crucial distinction, he was apt to end up in the same boat as Ed Deepnow. That thought had almost opened the door on some associative memory, but the shifting auras in the parking lot had pulled him away from it before it had been able to kick all the way in. Now it came to him. Ed had said something about seeing auras, hadn't he? No, he might have meant auras, but the word he actually used was colors. I'm almost positive of that. It was right after he talked about seeing the corpses of babies every place, even on the roofs. He said, Ralph watched the two men get into a beat-up old van and thought that he would never be able to remember Ed's words exactly. He was just too tired. Then, as the van drove off, trailing a cloud of exhaust that reminded him of the bright maroon stuff he'd seen coming from the tailpipe of the bakery truck that noon, another door opened, and the memory did come. He said that sometimes the world is full of colors, Ralph told his empty apartment, but that at some point they all started turning black. I think that was it. It was close, but was it everything? Ralph thought there had been at least a little more to Ed Spiel, but he couldn't remember what. And did it matter anyway? His nerves suggested strongly that it did. The cold line up his back had both widened and deepened. Behind him, the telephone rang. Ralph turned and saw it sitting in a bath of baleful red light, dark red, the color of nosebleeds and cocks, fighting cocks, rooster combs. No, part of his mind moaned. Oh, no, Ralph, don't get going on this again. Each time the phone rang, the envelope of light got brighter. During the intervals of silence, it darkened. It was like looking at a ghostly heart with a telephone inside it. Ralph closed his eyes tightly, and when he opened them again, the red aura around the telephone was gone. No, you just can't see it right now. I'm not sure, but I think you might have willed it away, like something in a lucid dream. As he crossed the room to the telephone, he told himself, and in no uncertain terms, that that idea was as crazy as seeing the auras in the first place. Except it wasn't, and he knew it wasn't. Because if it was crazy, how come it had taken only one look at that rooster-red halo of light to make him sure that it was Ed Deepnow calling? That's crap, Ralph. You think it's Ed because Ed's on your mind, and because you're so tired your head's getting funny. Go on, pick it up, you'll see. It's not the telltale heart, not even the telltale phone. It's probably some guy wanting to sell you subscriptions, or the lady at the blood bank wondering why you haven't been in lately. Except he knew better. Ralph picked up the phone and said hello. No answer, but someone was there. Ralph could hear breathing. Hello? He asked again. There was still no immediate answer, and he was about to say, I'm hanging up now, when Ed Deepnow said, I called about your mouth, Ralph. It's trying to get you in trouble. The line of cold between his shoulder blades was no longer a line. Now it was a thin plate of ice covering him from the nape of his neck to the small of his back. Hello, Ed? I saw you on the news today. It was the only thing he could think of to say. His hand did not seem to be holding the phone so much as to be cramped around it. Never mind that, old boy. Just pay attention. I've had a visit from that wide detective who arrested me last month, Lydecker. He just left, in fact. Ralph's heart sank, but not as far as he might have feared. After all, Lydecker's going to see Ed wasn't that surprising, was it? He'd been very interested in Ralph's story of the airport confrontation in the summer of 92. Very interested indeed. Did he? Ralph asked evenly. Detective Lydecker has the idea that I think people, or possibly supernatural beings of some sort, are trucking fetuses out of town in flatbeds and pickup trucks. What a scream, huh? Ralph stood beside the sofa, pulling the telephone cord restlessly through his fingers and realizing that he could see dull red light creeping out of the wire like sweat. The light pulsed with the rhythms of Ed's speech. You've been telling tales out of school, old boy. Ralph was silent. Calling the police after I gave that bitch the lesson she so richly deserved didn't bother me, Ed told him. I put it down to, well, grandfatherly concern. Or maybe you thought that if she was grateful enough, she might actually spare you a mercy fuck. After all, you're old but not exactly ready for Jurassic Park yet. You might have thought she'd let you get a finger into her at the very least. Ralph said nothing. Right, old boy? Ralph said nothing. You think you're going to rattle me with a silent treatment? Forget it. But Ed did sound rattled, thrown off his stride. It was as if he had made the call with a certain script in his head, and Ralph was refusing to read his lines. You can't. You better not. My calling the police after you beat Helen didn't upset you, but your conversation with Lydecker today obviously did. Why's that, Ed? Are you finally starting to have some questions about your behavior? And your thinking, maybe? It was Ed's turn to be silent. At last he whispered harshly, If you don't take this seriously, Ralph, it would be the worst mistake. Oh, I take it seriously, Ralph said. I saw what you did today, and I saw what you did out by the airport a year ago. Now the police know. I listen to you, Ed. Now you listen to me. You're ill. You've had some sort of mental breakdown. You're having delusions.
I don't have to listen to your crap, Ed Neely screamed.
No, you don't. You can hang up. It's your dime, after all. But until you do, I'm going to keep hammering away. Because I liked you, Ed, and I want to like you again. You're a bright guy, delusions or no delusions. And I think you can understand me. Lydecker knows, and Lydecker is going to be watching you. Are you seeing the colors yet? Ed asked. His voice had become calm again. At the same instant, the red glow around the telephone wire popped out of existence. What colors? Ralph asked at last. Ed ignored the question. You said you liked me? Well, I like you, too. I've always liked you. So I'm going to give you some very valuable advice. You're drifting into deep water, and there are things swimming around in the undertow you can't even conceive of. You think I'm crazy? But I want to tell you that you don't know what madness is. You don't have the slightest idea. You will, though, if you keep on meddling in things that don't concern you. Take my word for it. What things? Ralph asked. He tried to keep his voice light, but he was still squeezing the telephone receiver tight enough to make his fingers throb. Forces, Ed replied. There are forces at work in Derry that you don't want to know about. There are, well, let's just say there are entities. They haven't really noticed you yet, but if you keep fooling with me, they will. And you don't want that. Believe me, you don't. Forces? Entities? You asked me how I found out about all this stuff. Who brought me into the picture? Do you remember that, Ralph? Yes, he did too. Now, that had been the last thing Ed had said to him before turning on the big game show grin and going over to greet the cops. I've seen the colors since he came and told me. We'll talk about it later. The doctor told me. The little bald doctor. I think it's him you'll have to answer to if you try to mind my business again. And then God help you. The little bald doctor, Ralph said. Yes, I see. First the Crimson King and the Centurions, now the little bald doctor. I suppose next it'll be... Spare me your sarcasm, Ralph. Just stay away from me and my interests. Do you hear?
Stay away.
There was a click, and Ed was gone. Ralph looked at the telephone in his hand for a long time, then slowly hung it up. Just stay away from me and my interests? Yes, and why not? He had plenty of his own fish to fry. Ralph walked slowly into the kitchen, stuck a TV dinner, fillet of haddock, as a matter of fact, into the oven, and tried to put abortion protests, auras, Ed Deepnow, and the Crimson King out of his mind. It was easier than he would have expected. Summer slipped away as it does in Maine, almost unnoticed. Ralph's premature waking continued, and by the time the fall colors had begun to burn in the trees along Harris Avenue, he was opening his eyes around 2:15 each morning. That was lousy, but he had his appointment with James Roy Hong to look forward to, and there had been no repeat of the weird fireworks show he had been treated to after his first meeting with Joe Weiser. There were occasional flickers around the edges of things, but Ralph found that if he squeezed his eyes shut and counted to five, the flickers were gone when he opened them again. Well, usually gone. Susan Day's speech was scheduled for Friday, the 8th of October, and as September drew toward its conclusion, the protests and the public abortion on demand debate sharpened and began to focus more and more on her appearance. Ralph saw Ed on the TV news many times, sometimes in the company of Dan Dalton, but more and more frequently on his own, speaking swiftly, cogently, and often with that little gleam of humor not only in his eyes, but in his voice. People liked him, and the Friends of Life were apparently attracting the large membership to which Daily Bread, its political progenitor, had only been able to aspire. There were no more doll-throwing parties or other violent demonstrations, but there were plenty of marches and counter-marches, plenty of name-calling and fist-shaking and angry letters to the editor. Preachers promised damnation, Teachers urged moderation in education. Half a dozen young women calling themselves the Gay Lesbo Babes for Jesus were arrested for parading in front of the First Baptist Church of Derry with signs which read, "Get the fuck out of my body." A nameless policeman was quoted in the Derry News as saying that he hoped Susan Day would come down with a flu or something and have to cancel her appearance. Ralph received no further communications from Ed, but on September 21st, he received a postcard from Helen with 14 jubilant words scrawled across the back. "Hooray! A job! Derry Public Library! I start next month! See you soon, Helen!" Feeling more cheered than he had since the night Helen had called him from the hospital, Ralph went downstairs to show the card to McGovern. But the door of the downstairs apartment was shut and locked. Lois, then. Except that Lois was also gone, probably off to one of her card parties, or maybe downtown shopping for yarn and plotting another Afghan. Mildly chagrined and musing on how the people you most wanted to share good news with were hardly ever around when you were all but bursting with it, Ralph wandered down to Strawford Park, and it was there that he found Bill McGovern sitting on a bench near the softball field and crying.